The way we take care of ourselves is ever evolving.
And what we know for sure is that our mind and spirit are linked to our physical body.
And that our wellness seems to extend into our communities and the planet we all share.
It is very, very clear that wellness is interconnected.
We love spending time with you to explore and practice the breakthroughs, the insights, and the passions of incredible people helping us all see the world in a whole new light.
This is HealthGig.
So we wanted to begin today's podcast with some quotes from Rachel Carson, who wrote several books, but one of them is Silent Spring, and you're going to find out why we want to do this.
Those who contemplate the beauty of the earth find reserves of strength that will endure as long as life lasts. There is something infinitely healing in the repeated refrains of nature, the assurance that dawn comes after night and spring after winter.
We stand now where two roads diverge, but unlike the roads in Robert Frost's familiar poem, they are not equally fair. The road we have long been traveling is deceptively easy, a smooth superhighway on which we progress with great speed, but at its end lies disaster. The other fork of the road, the one less traveled by, offers our last, our only chance to reach a destination that assures the preservation of the earth. So, we have two very special guests today who are collaborating to work on the Rachel Carson Museum that's opening in Silver Spring. And those quotes that we just read are from Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. Trish and I have been looking forward to this podcast, and welcome Rebecca Henson and Julie Farkas to HealthGig.
Thank you so much.
How did you come up with the idea of the Rachel Carson Museum, and how did you two get together to collaborate on it?
So the museum project started almost 3 years ago. It came just after the first real year of COVID. Our two boys had been at home with us for over a year at that point, and I was driving by the Future Museum site and looked over, as I do anytime I drive by, and just wondered, what could that be? Or, you know, couldn't we make something special and beautiful out of this space? This building had been sitting empty for 6 decades, and I knew that Rachel Carson lived just around the corner from where that building is. She lived in my neighborhood in Woodmore in Silver Spring. She lived here and wrote The Sea Around Us, for which she won the National Book Award. And then after living in Woodmore, she moved to a neighborhood just across and upstream about 2 miles from where the building is. And that is where she wrote Silent Spring. It's perfectly nestled in between these neighborhoods where Carson lived, where she wrote her work at night and on the weekends while she had a day job, where she cared for an extended family that included her mom and nieces and adopted grandnephew. It was also where she drew such inspiration from the trees and the birds and the beautiful northwest branch of the Anacostia here.
Yeah, Rebecca and I started collaborating almost 2 years ago now, which is incredible. It's been such a wonderful journey. Rebecca used to work at the Calvert Group, where my husband used to work. And she thought, as she was launching this museum idea, that this would be something we might be interested in because of our commitment to organics and what that means for the earth and the ecosystem and the people and the animals. So we had a Zoom call with her because, again, this was during high COVID days. And I was like, I'd love to see the museum site and let's meet outside. And I sat and listened to Rebecca for about an hour and a half. And I was just, every additional thing she said was so thoughtful, so important, and I essentially said, I would love to help you make this museum a reality if you'll have me. And so I've been working with her ever since and just doing what I can, given my background, to help. I'm not an environmental policy analyst. I'm someone who's very committed to the environment, and I've got a background in strategic partnerships and fundraising and other things, and just was hoping that there was some skills that I brought that complemented the incredible depth of knowledge and skills that Rebecca has. And that's part of what's made our partnership, I think, so fruitful and fun.
Could you go into telling us, and we want to sit back and we just want to hear the story of Rachel Carson.
So Rachel Carson, she was born in 1907, just outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and she grew up outdoors a lot. Her two older siblings were quite older, so it was really Rachel and her mom that spent a lot of time together once Rachel was born. And the mother was a believer and follower of the nature study movement. Around the turn of the century, there was a wonderful movement that really encouraged parents and teachers to get kids outdoors. So the founder of the nature study idea coined the term field trip. The best classroom was the outdoors in the minds of the nature study movement believers. And so Maria Carson, Rachel's mom, was a believer in this. And so anytime she could, Rachel was outdoors and learning from the various cycles and, you know, seeing the creatures at different times of the year and then observing them and thinking about them and then writing about them and drawing. So we've seen some adorable drawings of Rachel's from when she was a little girl. We have a wonderful partnership with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and they have many of her books from when she was a child. And so you can see some of her drawings, but also her practicing her name in cursive in the margins. And she was very much already, you know, at a very young age, seeing that she was part of that natural world. And she considered, she said, the wild creatures were her friends. Rachel was having her stories published in the St. Nicholas magazine at age 11 and 12 and winning awards. But Carson's mom also put a lot of attention and effort into making sure that Rachel could have a career. And ever since she moved here for graduate school, she was a resident of Maryland until she passed away at age 56.
Didn't she have a home in Maine?
She did, and her heart really was in Maine. So as much as I 100% believe that she was a Maryland story and that she's someone that we will just enjoy celebrating here in this state, she loved Maine. And there was that sense, many of us know in Maine, of that mystery, just standing on the rocky shoreline there. You're confronted with emotions. She was always very perceptive to that sense of awe and that sense of wonder, but Maine is full of awe and wonder.
She wrote another book, A Sense of Wonder, that I told Tricia before this podcast that we had on our bookshelf growing up.
And you're kidding. Oh
no. And that was a book written in Maine.
So it started out as an article in Women's Home Companion in 1956. It was called Help Your Child to Wonder. It was her goal to help parents and really any adult to help nurture that innate sense of wonder that children already have. You have to be willing to entertain the child's curiosity and maybe just to ask simple questions. You know, when you walk out the front door and you hear a bird, just ask, oh, did you hear that? Or I wonder what that is. And you don't have to have any clue who's making that sound. With the sense of wonder, too, it was published posthumously. So it was something that Rachel, she wanted to return to this article she'd written in 1956 and make it a big book of wonder and talk about all the things that are both based completely in science, but also have that sense of awe or mystery to it. She was not able to write that book because of cancer, and so when she did pass away, they turned that beautiful article from 1956 into a slim book that still conveys that spirit of the sense of wonder.
So why don't we move into talking about Silent Spring?
So when Rachel was working as an editor with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the mid-40s, she came across a document as part of her duties there that was about testing being done at the Patuxent Refuge here in Maryland. And the testing was DDT. They were testing DDT and its effects on wildlife. She saw very clearly from this memo that we have, and it's something I should add to our website because it's such a clearly written, it's a one-page memo about the impacts of DDT to wildlife and that there should be reason for concern and reason for measured and thoughtful use of this chemical. Not saying absolutely don't ever use it, but that we need to study this more, that there is a potential effect that they're seeing on wildlife. She saw this in the mid-40s. She reached out to a few places to see if she could get it published, not the memo, but a story that she would write on synthetic pesticides like DDT, and that there may be a cause for concern, and there may be a cause for the general public to use these chemicals with care. So she wrote an article and sent it to Reader's Digest, and they turned it down. It was something that still concerned her and that she thought about throughout the next 15 years or so. Some of that, too, was part of her community here in the DC, Maryland area. Many of her friends came from the Audubon Naturalist Society. So she was a board member there. They now have their headquarters at Woodend in Chevy Chase. But at the time, they were in the district and they had social gatherings, you know, bird walks and bird counts. And they also, especially post-war, when Rachel was there and a board member, they started to turn their sights and start gentle advocacy around conservation issues that related to wildlife habitat. And so Rachel was hearing from her friends at Audubon Naturalist Society about issues that concerned them that were a threat to birds or a threat to fish, and she would share other concerns. And so it was this really dynamic meeting of friends over these decades, and people would come from different organizations or really agencies and departments within the government. They would compare notes in a way, let each other know, you know, what are some important issues at the time. And synthetic pesticides was coming up in some of those discussions. And we can see them in some of the articles that Rachel edited as a board member at Audubon Naturalist Society. And then finally, in the late 50s, she received a letter from a friend in Duxbury, Massachusetts. And the friend was alarmed because she had seen aerial spraying of DDT and then seeing the effect on the birds in her backyard, birds writhing and then die. And she wrote her letter to Rachel, and that was kind of it for Rachel. She knew, because she had known some of these risks for quite a while at that point, she felt that she had to take some action. And because she had so enamored the country with her writing, at this point, she was a famous writer. The country and beyond loved her writing because it did give that sense of wonder to them, and it helped to shed light on things like the deep ocean that we hadn't had much information on before, and Carson did it. She wrote about it in such a captivating way. And so now she knew that she had that platform, and if she were to write something about something concerning, that people would read it. She did not want to write a book or write something so controversial, but she did feel eventually, after asking others to write something, that she was the one that had to do this.
The thing that is so special and unique about her story is that she had written her first three books, you know, one of which was a National Book Award winner, were all about the wonders of nature. And it was her love of nature that drove her to feeling compelled to write this book, because she wrote it because she was afraid of losing everything she loved and that she knew were so important to so many other people. It was really a sense of duty. And she'd always also written with the idea of making nature and science accessible to everybody. She took those same talents that she used in her books that were more beautiful and was able to convey some pretty sophisticated scientific concepts in Silent Spring. And to the extent that a book like that can be written in a way that's understandable and almost beautiful, even though it's very difficult content.
And it was so controversial, right? Could you talk about what happened when it was published?
The very topic of synthetic pesticides and casting some doubt about the wonders of modernity was not welcomed by industry, or at least many industries, but she'd expected that. And so she has, I believe it's over 60 pages of notes and footnotes in her book. And so it was very easy to either fact check or see that there is so much supporting evidence to what she was saying. She was never an alarmist. She was never what we might call an activist. She was trying to speak plainly and sometimes beautifully about the risk that we were posing to nature and to ourselves when we do not check technology. In this case, it was synthetic pesticides, but she saw it more broadly as us going down a path without thinking or without doing, in this case, the testing that is necessary and the public education and outreach that is necessary when we're using something harmful. And many times, people who did criticize her hadn't actually read the book.
Didn't President Kennedy have a scientific advisory committee sort of check the book? And it turns out she was on target with everything.
Exactly. He did order a committee to look into her claims. And they came back saying that overall, the book is sound and that there were no concerns that they had with regard to the factual nature of the book. It really was a win in the light of this pushback and some of the attacks on her. And those attacks were very gender-based, calling her hysterical and, you know, using terms that were clearly related to her being a woman, an unmarried woman, especially a spinster, and calling into question why anyone would care about the next generation when they hadn't produced any biological children of their own.
Tell us about the process at the museum. How are you going to capture all this? Like, what's the plan and how's it going and where are you on the process?
Well, some of the plan really picks up from that last book that Carson wanted to write. So the book on wonder, that much bigger book where she hoped to really impart that sense of accessible wonder and accessible connection to nature that all of us can have. And since she was never able to do that, we're hoping to bring a lot of her philosophy around wonder and how we nurture that natural wonder into a physical form. And that will be the museum. So the first floor of the museum will try to impart that wonder, and it will impart that wonder by helping us to feel familiar with the nature that's right outside of our windows, of our doors here in the DC, Maryland area, so that we feel comfortable and feel familiar with the bird song and the trees and the seasons of nature that we have right here. And in that familiarity, we hope that people do have a sense of connection to where they are and a sense of pride to where they are, and then can further develop that relationship with nature that can be so good for the soul and the environment itself, and just for our communities and society as well. She firmly believed that it wasn't just about protecting the environment, but it was something that strengthened ourselves, our families, and our community. And so we also want to give a sense of deep time and that we are part of this world and universe and an understanding of where we belong and all of that. She wrote about these eternal cycles of Earth and the seasons and just how trying to explain them in science, but also leaving some room for mystery and for awe. And then we also will tell her story. So we are partnering with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who has many of her items from throughout her life. And we hope to share that story of her perseverance and her wonder and her strength and her resourcefulness through the museum.
What have been the successes and the challenges so far?
The challenges are always that it takes a little longer than we'd like it to take. But the successes are that we have strong, strong community support. Rebecca initially raised $40,000 for the very first part of this project from 303 donors, most of whom live in the area surrounding the museum site. And we've since raised 10 times that, also predominantly from community people. We also have a very, very strong support of Montgomery Park. So the building that we're looking to turn into the museum, to renovate and expand and to do it in accordance with what's called the Living Building Challenge, is a Montgomery Park Zone building. As Rebecca mentioned, it has been vacant for about 60 years, so it needs a lot of love. It's mostly been successes. The only challenge is that we'd love to open tomorrow. And it's a historically protected building. That adds an additional layer of review. As often as we wish we could be moving forward more quickly, it's given us additional time to think about different aspects of the museum, both in terms of design. Of course, the curation is also something that's an ongoing thought and process, but we just feel so lucky to live in a jurisdiction where we have the strong support of the leadership of parks. We have strong support from elected officials. We've already been approved for a bond bill to go towards the renovation. In addition to hundreds upon hundreds of local residents, we've also been able to get some funding from local foundations. So we're just so excited. And then the other thing, we're particularly another huge success, we've just started this partnership with Vox Pop. We're hoping the podcast will be able to help us spread the word about what we want to do with that.
We reached out to the company Vox Pop, which provides a lot of the speech-to-text technology that NPR programs like the 1A or Fresh Air use for their listeners to call in and interact, so respond to a question or ask a question or leave a comment. They are based in New Zealand, and Peter Fowler, one of the co-founders, happens to be a Rachel Carson fan, and his life was, as he says it, affected by Silent Spring and by, you know, reading her book when he was younger. He then offered very generously to partner with us on this project that I had suggested, which is to capture the stories of ordinary individuals.
We want, through this partnership with Vox Pop, to be able to have everyone share the stories. People like me, people like Rebecca, people like Tricia Aduro. And we'd also love to have everyday people, but we're also really interested because, Carson, when you talk about the environmental movement, this has been actually a story, you know, historically, of real bipartisan support for how do we take care of our earth. And this is something that all presidents have asked, and senators and congressmen. So we also would love to record some people who've, you know, Jane Fonda may have something to say about Rachel Carson. Any number of people, but we really want to collect all of those for the historic record. And Rebecca's also talked to the Library of Congress about archiving these stories.
The people who, when I mention what we're doing, want to share their story about when they recall their mother having read the book and what it meant to their mother or a grandmother or obviously themselves as well. And there's something almost magic, a spark, you know, that we can feel when people are telling us those stories. And it feels like a duty to collect these both inspiring and transformational stories, but also a real part of American history, because we so often talk about Rachel Carson and Silent Spring sparking the environmental movement. But what does that mean at the community level and in a family? What did it mean to an individual family? And so we're just so excited to get these stories.
On Earth Day this year, we are going to be doing a 24-hour collection of stories. I think that's when we're going to launch. On our website, there'll be a button, again, developed in partnership with Vox Pop, and people will be able to go to our website, press a button, and start sharing their stories, and we'd love to do that. And we really do want to, as Rebecca said, she's heard, and I've now heard, so many stories of people that have been affected by Rachel Carson. You know, what we want to collect most quickly are the stories of people who read it in 1962.
So if we have anyone listening that read it in 1962, you want them to reach out to you, right?
We want them to go to the website. They can certainly reach out to us also. They can go to the website on Earth Day and it'll be up there. I mean, we want the stories of everyone.
Actually, the button is live. We have started taking recordings already. It's very user-friendly.
So cool.
The website is springsongmuseum.org. And if you click on the tab that will be on the right-hand side, it will say Spring Story. And that's where you will find the button that you can press to record your story.
So tell us about the name Spring Song.
Well, we actually started out with the name, a kind of clunky name, Rachel Carson, Place of Wonder, Inc. Very quickly, a friend of ours and a member of the Latino community here in Silver Spring, who's a conservation advocate, sat down with me and said, let's talk about the name. The name makes sense. It's a museum that will speak to Rachel Carson's legacy, but we're missing out on something. And that is the collective voice of our community here in Silver Spring. I so appreciated her feedback and went and thought a lot about what we could name this museum, whose purpose was to spark wonder in nature and help folks feel connected to the trees and the birds right outside their window. And thinking a lot about Silent Spring and Silver Spring, the name Spring Song popped into my head. And then we have that amazing sonic proof of life, the bird song, the frogs the spring peepers that Rachel writes about hearing in her house in Silver Spring from the creek down the street from her. All of those things are these reminders of our connection to the life in this world, to each other as well, but really the beautiful bird song and those sounds that return every single year and that we can't take that for granted. Carson was so motivated by her love for the earth, and she even links that to the sounds, the bird song, and the sounds of the frogs, and seeing the beauty of the buds opening in the spring again and returning. And so that spring song motivated her. It's not just one song. It's not just one creature making the song, but it's all of us in a way. It's all of the creatures that have that robust return to life.
It's a beautiful name.
We're so lucky to be in this part of the county. It's so diverse, language diversity and ethnic diversity. And where the building is, it does have a parking lot, but it's right on the county's BRT, Bus Rapid Transit line. So there's mass transit there. And we really are excited to be where people already are. And so we can serve our community in the best way possible.
It is where people are. But the other thing is, it is also where nature is. And it's this dichotomy that makes the project so exciting. It is on a state highway. And when I say on a state highway, I mean on, not a block away from the state highway. It is, the building sits on the state highway, but it also happens to be at this dramatic gorge at the fall line between the Piedmont Plateau and the coastal plain. And so it's the same kind of natural drama and beauty that you see in Great Falls in a much bigger way, but it's right there. And it's also along 25 miles of trails that start in Prince George's County in Bladensburg and finish in Sandy Springs. So again, when we think of connection, that's another way. It's connecting two different counties in Maryland where all of us can be connected. And so it is this shockingly beautiful nature right there at the highway, and that most people never know, but thousands of people drive by every day.
It was one of President Teddy Roosevelt's favorite places in the region. After Great Falls, this was his favorite place to come on horseback.
Thank you both so much. This has been so informative, and we cannot wait for Spring Song to open.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on HealthGig. We loved having you with us. We hope you'll tune in again next week. In the meantime, be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast and follow us on healthgigpod.com. I'm Tricia.
And I'm Doro.
Be well.